indoors! Why walk when the room's four walls contain and entrap your soul? Why walk when you can order takeout and stay home and watch TV and commit yourself to a legacy of exquisite indolence? Yes, you have two legs, but that was a biological design flaw. Not, incidentally, intelligent design, but you may as well believe the spaghetti monster at this rate than the physical sham known as walking.
But your two legs are now used only if you live in a city where you can walk, or if you have a gym membership. A gym membership! A gym membership! And who can afford a gym membership in this damned infernal economic downturn? Who has time? Who has anything, really? Well, the novelist Larry Block has a few ideas about all this.
Okay. So I'm here today with Lawrence Block. He's the author of many novels, but right now we're here to talk about his memoir, Step by Step. Larry, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Sarah.
So the first thing I kind of want to note here is that, especially with all the memoirs that seem to be published of late, we've got angst written, we've got deep, dark secrets, we have people telling various shades of the truth. It almost seems like Step by Step is a bit of an anti-memoir.
I hadn't thought of it that way. It's differs from an awful lot of memoirs in that I was attempting to write nonfiction, but aside from that, I don't know. It's not a whole lot of angst-ridden verbiage, but
I mean, take it that you were much more interested in chronic. I mean, it sounds to me obviously you weren't about to say I'm going to set out and, you know, plumb the depths of my soul here. If anything, you wanted to write about a specific topic and a specific time period. And then it just got into other facets and subjects and areas of your life that you didn't really expect to.
That's quite the case. I wanted to write really about a year in the life of a aging and not particularly talented racewalker. And one thing led to another. As you know, I found myself writing about walking in general. I found myself having a lot more to say about childhood and adolescence than I ever expected to write. So, and I just let it go where it wanted to. I was secure in the knowledge that it was unlikely anyone would want to publish this anyway, and unlikely that anyone would ever read it. So I figured I'd just write it the way I wanted it.
Well, let's get into a little bit about the childhood aspect, as you've said here and also elsewhere, that, you know, there's far more about my early days than I ever thought I'd explore in print. Is it just that you were not interested in exploring that? That you just didn't feel that it would be something that people would want to read? Or is it just as you were working on it, as these memories came to forward, that you started making a whole bunch of connections? And obviously the prospect of connection is something that we're going to get into a little bit later on, because there were a number of connections that I noticed in general. Mm-hmm. But first talk about the childhood aspect, I guess.
Well, I didn't expect it would be of much interest, or that it would apply particularly. And then I realized the extent to which walking had been a leitmotif in my life for a while, ever since crawling, actually. And I just found myself inclined to write about that.
Well, it's funny you bring up, I guess, the leitmotif, because there's a section early on in the book where you're talking about how difficult it is to learn how to ride a bike, and that's why you depend so heavily on walking. And then later you describe how you essentially wake up and suddenly you take out your bike and you can ride it. And what's interesting, and this gets into the connection aspect of how there's this seeming randomness to it. And so when you were sort of going back and describing various events, did you sort of expect that certain things would connect more readily than they necessarily did? I guess, what was the nature of, like, finding connections?
Gee, I don't know. I think I understand the question, but I'm not sure how to answer it. I didn't think in terms of themes or connections or anything else when I wrote the book, but then I really never do. I don't in fiction either. It just goes where it goes, essentially. I mean, I obviously make decisions on every page, but there's rarely a grand design that, of which I'm conscious. And as I said, I wrote this with, you know, I always write what I feel like writing, but I wrote this with a greater degree of freedom because, as I said, I didn't have a lot of expectations for it. It certainly wasn't written under contract. I had no abiding confidence that HarperCollins or anyone else would really want to publish it when I was done. You know, someone was saying, well, we want to appeal to the, sell the book to the other ultra walkers in the country, and I thought, well, that's a dozen copies you're gonna sell right there. Most of them are friends of mine who will expect to get the book for free.
Right.
So I don't think we can concentrate too heavily on that market.
And yet, you expressed some degree of surprise that HarperCollins was really on board with this book once they received it. So. How did, when you were working presumably either in isolation, or did you let them know that you were working on this and then delivered
no,
the book?
No.
Okay.
No, it came to them and to my agent for that matter as a, completely out of the blue.
And then clearly they've been more or less on board about getting it.
They knew they wanted to do it. That was never a problem, as it turned out.
Yeah. Well, let's move to one part of this, connectedness that I find, which is the one book that comes up, and you'd have a big, fairly extensive section on it, and it sort of surprised me, not that you talked about this book, but that you talked about this book versus all the other books that you've written, and that would be Random Walk. And when I was getting ready to read this memoir of yours, I kind of knew that you would probably approach Random Walk, because it seemed somewhat obvious to do so, but looking at that book now, roughly 20 years after its publication, as compared to the memoir, did you sort of find that, did you find that there was like an element of unsurprise that Random Walk had a certain reaction versus what you expected the reaction to Step by Step to be? Now, that's sort of a roundabout way of asking, but it's more just to find the connection between Random Walk and Step by Step.
Well, I don't know what connection there were, but it seemed that if I had a book that was about, however many people setting out walking eastward across the country, that it certainly deserved mention and discussion in a book that was about walking. It seemed of a piece with it to that extent, and I didn't particularly write about my other work because it didn't seem germane. It's obvious enough that a large portion of the audience for Step by Step is going to be composed of people who are familiar with my fiction, because otherwise why would they be drawn to buy it? But I didn't want to particularly write about being a writer or about what I'd written, except in passing. Except with this book, because, as I said, it seemed to apply.
Well, also because you mentioned that you had attempted memoir before, and that memoir, which I presume is still unfinished, that had more to do with the working life of a writer, I suppose?
No, that memoir was about the early years, about the years writing pseudonymous books and getting started in the business. And I wrote about 50,000 words of it, and it still exists, but I never went back to it. It was part of a multi-book contract. It was submitted as part of that, and eventually the day came when I bought it back. It was a tiny portion of the advance, and I don't think anybody at Morrow was that excited about it. My agent had just bundled things together, and because I didn't seem inclined to resume it, oddly enough, now I find myself thinking that maybe I ought to. That maybe that's what I I might want to do next.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
What brought this on? Is it just from...
The experience of Step by Step. It's... it's early days. I have no idea how it'll sell, but I know that people seem to like it, and it seems to be getting a fair amount of attention. So we'll see.
Well, I think just speaking as one person familiar with your work, the reason why I was sort of piqued when you talked about this unfinished memoir is because there's almost like a surprising lack of amount of stuff written about that time period when you were writing pseudonymously. There was a book written by the guy who then later went on to do the Don't Know Much About History, who wrote a book published about 25 years ago about the paperbacking of America and mm-hmm. went on to mass market paperbacks as a whole, but nothing so much about like the dawn of, say, Gold Medal and Dell and all of the other paperback houses and the pseudonymous aspect. And I wonder, could this interest also have to do with the fact that, you know, with all due respect, you're also one of the few people still left to remember?
Yeah, that might have something to do with it. Also, when I wrote, I think it was about 95 that I, 94 or 5 that I wrote the memoir, and I hadn't been planning to, as I may have mentioned in there. I was stuck on something else. I had time booked at Ragdale, and I had to write something. You know, at the time, that was, 14 years ago, I was 55, 56 years old. It felt early days to be writing a memoir, to me, and that was before the memoir genre became so...
Now you have memoirs by 20-somethings.
I know it. I remember the birth canal, yeah. and anyway, at that time, it felt early for me to be doing this. Also, I think I was probably guarded in a way I wouldn't be now. I remember one point my mother made, and she was younger at the time when she said this than I am now. She said, one good thing about getting older, and perhaps the only good thing about getting older, is that every year, she said, there are a few more things that I just don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
And that's very, very true. And so that lots of things that seemed important at the time don't. And I think if I were to do that again, and I haven't, since I wrote it, I haven't looked at it.
Yeah.
But if I were to resume and either rewrite or reapproach the subject, I think I would probably be less guarded. I think also that if I seemed young to be writing a memoir then, I certainly don't now. And if anything, I feel if I'm going to write a memoir, I think I should do so while the mind still works and while I'm still able to remember some of this, you know. So it may be something that I'll do.
Well, then you get into the sense of, at a certain age you can call it memoir, but the older one gets, then do you get into the realm of what's called, or used to be called, autobiography, where people go, you know, I remember when it was like this, so and so, and, you know, it sort of takes on this veneer of, you know, I guess extra gravitas because you're looking back from an elder age, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's just a semantics issue, but it seems like, on the one hand, it's memoir. On the other hand, maybe since memoir is defined as something, you know, very self-contained.
Well, it seems to me that one person's gravitas is another person's pomposity, so you have to be guarded here.
Said, I mean, I actually was going to open with this, but I had dug up a quote from an art exhibition that you took part in maybe a decade or so ago called Galut, which is National Museum of American Jewish History. And obviously this quote's not in the book, but in some ways I feel like it's kind of at the heart of Step by Step. I'll just read it, which is, I am not aware of any conscious or unconscious effort I make to fit in. I don't feel that fitting in is required. I feel that I am fully assimilated. I don't even have a sense of what I expect to be my legacy in any respect. I'll probably leave some books behind. I don't know if there's anything specifically Jewish about them, or that anyone will care about any of the work for longer than it takes for the body to cool down. Now, there's a number of ways I want to kind of unpack this, but first I kind of want to go with the first part, which is just, you know, obviously you're getting older, and what's been happening is that many of your early books are being reissued by Hard Case Crime. Mm-hmm. So is it a question of just wanting to make sure that as much of your early work is in print for as many people, however many or however few, are around to read? And so is this statement even true now?
I think, you know, as far as reprinting with Hard Case Crime and having the stuff back in print, I think before any other motives are suspected for most human activity, you have to first entertain the idea that it might be a simple case of avarice.
Sure.
And that's certainly certainly been my guiding principle here. I'm happy to see things back in print. I had a conversation, obviously a couple of years ago, with Evan Hunter.
Yeah.
And Charles Ardai had approached him about reprinting the Matt Cordell stories.
Right.
And Evan gave me a call. He wanted to know if my experiences with Charles were positive and did I like him and that. And he said, I gather you're letting some old stuff be reprinted, and I don't know whether I should or not. Thank you. He said, I don't know whether I should or not. I don't really think that much of the stories and that. And I said two things. I said, first of all, I can understand your reluctance. I have trouble reading my own early work, but I also remember your Matt Cordell stories and thought very highly of them. I think they probably hold up fine, even though you might have trouble reading them. I said, second of all, I said, I have to say that my guiding principle when faced with two decisions is which one brings money into the house. And Evan let the book be reprinted and was happy with the experience.
Yeah. I think it also would explain why One Night Stands and Lost Weekends came out in a trade edition, mm-hmm. because that had been available in a limited edition, but, and I'm going to end up misquoting your introduction, but you essentially made the point of, well, why not make it available?
It took me a while to realize that. And part of it is greed, and part of it is caring less about the possible opinion of people and so on. So they seem to go hand in hand.
Yeah. Well, that also brings to mind, I'm just going to jump around here, which is, you know, when you talk about bodies of work and legacy and the like, I mean, what a lot of writers seem to do is say donate their archives to libraries. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much are you considering sort of your entire work as a whole and what its potential future is for perpetuity? And I also bring this up in light of, you know, we're in this age of ever-changing technology. I mean, I just spent this particular morning opining about, you know, this new Kindle device, which had just been announced at a press conference. So
with a $479 price tag,
yeah.
I see.
And this is supposed to be designed for college students who want textbooks. Yeah.
It's so stupid. They should give the things away.
So, I guess just to restate my question, how much are you thinking about how you want your works to be preserved in terms of, you know, for later on, for perpetuity?
I don't care a whole lot, I don't think. I can conjure up any number of scenarios for life after death, but one that I cannot imagine for a moment is lying around in a cloud somewhere and wasting a lot of time caring whether people are reading your books on this planet that you've long since left behind. I don't think I care. You know, as one gets closer to the end, people seem to find themselves caring a lot about their legacy. I try not to delude myself that the stuff will last. Mm-hmm. I don't think it will. What's odd is that genre fiction lasts much longer than anything else. People don't realize this. They think if they want to make a mark upon the ages, they've got to write serious literature. Best-selling mainstream novels are forgotten generally during the writer's lifetime. The other stuff lives on in academia. Nobody reads it by choice. Whereas genre fiction, people are apt to, at least for a while, a certain amount of it.
Well, it's sort of like there was that NPR piece about forgotten Pulitzer Prize winners, and people would write in, at least on the online part, in the comments going, well, wait a minute, I've read this book and I've read that book. So, you know, one person's forgotten is another person's great memory, or one person's rediscovery is someone, you know, who's always discovered it, has always been reading that. But it's interesting you bring up the genre fiction aspect, too, because, you know, look at Raymond Chandler, whose books seem to be getting reissued in new formats in new countries all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So is it just that genre fiction, because it is what it is, and it captures a certain time or a certain place or a certain milieu, that people can look at it as that window to that world?
I think it's simpler than that. I think it's that it's entertaining. And in a way that is not just of its time. Because that's true not just of the critically acclaimed like Chandler and Hammett, but it's through all down the line. Agatha Christie's never been out of print for 20 minutes, you know, and so on. So I think that's what it is. When all said and done, the people would just as soon have a good time.
Yeah. So let me return to that last quote, and this is, it also ties into the fact that you reveal a lot more about your childhood.
I made a mistake having ordered something crunchy.
But. That's. I was actually very pleasantly, but somewhat taken aback how much you sort of delved into, you know, your exposure and education in Judaism. And I think there's this quote you had about Reform Judaism being like Unitarian church with more food.
Better food.
Better food, I'm sorry. But was it just that because your childhood was in that particular environment that caused you to sort of go back and reconsider? Because it seems like you have a very, I wouldn't say uninterested, but it's not very important necessarily that you are Jewish. And correct me if I'm wrong, but that's just the impression that either I'm getting from the book or just in general.
I don't know. I'm not a religious person, certainly. It's always been clear to me and hardly a secret that I'm Jewish, but has never dictated my social circles, my choice of friends, or much in the way of activity. I think I write in the book about the extent to which Lynn and I are sort of cross-pollinated.
Right, how she would use certain Jewish phrases and you once did the sign of the cross, so it seems like it almost, you know, completely aligned and then went beyond that point.
It was startling. It was we both broke up. It's good the car stayed on the road. Of course, with all that going for it, how could it fail to?
I think it's more just because you describe certain experiences, like going to like the Jewish Boy Scout troops or on a youth group where, you know, you're all going to synagogue whether you really like it or not. So on the one hand, there's this sort of ambivalence, but it's also like, it wasn't that there was like an active rejection of the way you were brought up. It's just that certain things sort of fell away based on what choices you made as you grew up.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And so in that respect, what prompted this particular art exhibit to happen, where you were essentially asked to comment on your Judaism.
That has a much longer life on the internet than it needed to. The fellow Mark Bergesh is a guy I knew. Well, I didn't know him when I was growing up, but I knew the family. I knew his younger brother, and he's the photographer who put this together. Took a couple of photos of me and interviewed me. And as I said, an interview that has had a much longer life than I would have thought it might.
Which also, I guess, gets back to the perpetuity question and how the internet kind of captures things not necessarily in proportion to how important they necessarily
Absolutely.
Were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to think of how I can phrase this, but I'll just sort of seg a little bit into talking about another connection between race walking and writing. And there are several, but the one of them that I'm sort of interested in as well is the aspect of community. Like, for example, in, you know, writing and race walking both appear to be solitary pursuits, something you do alone, you shut yourself in, or even when you're in amongst people, you're not necessarily competing against someone. You mm-hmm. just, you have your own pursuit. But at the same time, writers get together in writers' groups. They get together at conventions. Mm-hmm. Race walking, I understand you were active on a message board and you would write up mm-hmm. race reports and mm-hmm. develop this whole sense of community. So what sort of, I guess, commonalities do you see between the community aspect of both these activities?
I don't know. Probably, you're probably right that they're comparable in certain respects, but...
Or I guess the question is, what made you seek out particular aspects of community? Like with race walking, you could have just left it as, this is something I do, and I'm telling Lynn about it, I'm telling friends here. But is it just that you want to be able to share in this experience with, you know, a certain group of people because they're doing the same thing and the like?
I don't give it all that much attention.
I guess the question is that how much of what you do, whether it be writing, whether it be race walking, whether it be anything, has it always been sort of just these are things you do and you sort of fall into them or you choose them, but you're only thinking about it after the fact when you have occasion to think about it after the fact?
Yeah, that's probably the case. Yeah, probably.
The other thing, too, that I noticed about race walking and writing is that, on the one hand, there's an inverse proportionality to them where, you know, you're spending a lot of time thinking about a book, but then you're going to a colony like Ragdale, you shut yourself away and you sort of do it in these huge bursts. Whereas race walking, it's much more, at least on the surface, it's much more linear. You start at a starting point and you keep going and going until you reach a particular finish line. And there's, I don't know, it's somehow more patient somehow in the way that you're doing it. But at the same time, there's also a sense of proportion because, and I'll just talk about the race walking aspect, where you started off and you were up to 40 events in a year in 81, and then you went away from it for 22 years. Mm-hmm. So what can you sort of comment about this pattern of, you know, you dive right into something, do it as fully and completely as possible, and then you kind of discard it and move on and maybe come back to it?
Story of my life. You know, that's just been the case. I have been a creature of intense but transitory enthusiasm.
Is that something that you've tried to, not so much that a habit that you've tried to break, but just something that you've been aware of and then try to work against, or?
Well, something I've been aware of. I don't know how much effort I put into trying to change that.
I guess the reason I bring it up, too, is because looking at it from a different aspect, it's all about being goal-oriented. Mm-hmm. So with race walking, it's that there is a goal in mind, which is to reach the finish line. Mm-hmm. With writing, it's to get the book done. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, as you yourself point out at the very end of the book, you sort of stop in mid-race. With a book, it's that you're never really done with it. It's that someone else decides there's a deadline, there's a particular distance that you're traveling. So what of the sort of, I guess, the commonality of having a goal, and that if you don't have a goal, because you also describe how you know, a few years ago, you sort of spent some time, say, in your apartment, and it seemed like the goal you had was watching television programs and not necessarily doing something. Is it because you didn't have that particular goal in mind or didn't want one? I guess, how important is having a goal so that you can keep working towards something?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how effectively you can compare writing and walking. There, one thing about the walking is that nobody else on earth gives a damn whether I do it or not, or how it works, or and afterward, it's done. You know, it's different, and also no one. I don't make a living as a race walker. It's good I don't have to. I don't know. One's a leisure time pursuit. The other's a career.
Which I guess so. I'm just going to challenge my own assumption, which is, why is it all too easy to make the comparison between writing and race walking? Or is it really just the sense of writing is what I do professionally, and when I don't want to do it, I don't have to do it. And race walking is a hobby that I do sometimes obsessively, sometimes not at all, and that there isn't necessarily any correlation except that, you know, some interviewer decides to find...
Well, I think the only real commonality of the two pursuits is that this one particular person is happens to have done them both. But no, I don't think there's a relationship, really. You know, you can take any two things and figure out ways in which they correspond and ways that
sure.
they don't, but I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, there was one point where you describe how, looking back, you found a commonality between when you first took up running and having stopped drinking, and that at the time you weren't aware of it, but looking back, you could sort of see where the two might have converged. So,
well, yeah, I can see where one certainly gave rise to the other very possibly. But no, I wasn't aware of it at the time.
Yeah. Well, let me close this interview with one last question, which is that the book ends in mid-race, but where are you at this moment in terms of your race-walking pursuits?
I've stopped entirely. It's unsettling. Here I'm going out, and thank God, on an abbreviated tour. You know, having gained a great deal of weight and gotten quite out of shape, and I was telling somebody the other day that I feel like one of those poor bastards from The Biggest Loser, who, you know, lost 300 pounds and wrote a book, gained it all back, and is now waddling around the country to promote it, you know, so we'll see how it goes.
So then, might there be some other heretofore unknown pursuit that might capture your fancy in quite the same way? And
I may at any moment resume race walking, I don't know. But I find myself increasingly drawn to pursuits that don't require leaving the house or doing much of anything. I find Netflix a perfectly acceptable substitute for most of the activity that used to keep me going.
Is that come back to the, I guess, not caring what people think, or
I
not
think
caring?
It's age. I think it's age. Much as one is inclined to muster up a lot of denial on the subject, I think it's real. And there are lots of things that I just have less enthusiasm for than I used to. Writing's one of them.
Well, that's the thing, is that so many either fans or people or interviews are seemingly always after, are you going to write about this character? Are you going to write about that character? And from my standpoint, it's more, if you are writing, great, and if you aren't, then you aren't. But what sort of keeps your interest in terms of writing, and as it has waned, has it just become easier to just say, I'm not going to do it, and I don't mind not doing it?
Well, it becomes easier to not do it. Partly because it becomes more difficult to do it. I've started several books in the past year or two, and seen no reason to continue with them, or seen any number of reasons to continue with them, but just not had sufficient inclination to do so. The idea of, and you know, all of this is subject to change at a moment's notice, but the idea of sitting down and writing a whole book about any of the characters that I've pursued so far seems, like a task you'd assign to Sisyphus, perhaps. I feel really complete with all of that. All of those seem to me to reach a natural resting point, a stasis. And just the idea of writing a novel of any sort, it seems like more of an effort than I want to involve myself with. Now, this past November, I wrote a screenplay.
Right.
You know about that.
That's why you're going out to L.A. as well, or?
No, but while I'm out there, that's a meeting that I'll probably be having with somebody. But I adapted one of the Scudder novels as a spec screenplay. And I enjoyed that work. And I wouldn't mind doing more of that, but that was working with material that already existed. It was not developing a new story, and it was demanding enough to be good hard work, and it was satisfying when it was done, and if it gets shot, that'll be nice, and if it doesn't, it was a waste of time. But we'll see. I think I could see doing more of that if that should work out.
Or what about, seeing as you're thinking of this, reviving this memoir, adapting screenplays, is it just possible that it's the novel form that you're disinterested in, other forms of writing that you may not have even tried before that may have come of interest?
No, not necessarily. Part of it is a question of how much heavy lifting is involved. I've done some short fiction in recent months, and that I seem capable of doing in that. But people will discourse at great length on how short stories are more difficult than novels are nuts. You know, that's
maybe
like
it depends on the kind of short story. Or
that's like people that old line of "I'm sorry to write you such a long letter. I didn't have time to write a short one." Yeah, right.
But it's not like we're going to see, even though you have written songs and even quote from one or two in the book, we're not going to see like a full-fledged Larry Block authored musical anytime soon.
No. I haven't written a song in a long, long time. Funny how they come and go, you know.
Well, I guess I'll just close with one last thing. It's in light of the whole, you know, what fans expect, there had been a piece by Alexander McCall Smith in the Wall Street Journal about the concept of, I guess, ownership of characters. And I guess this sort of ties into, you know, you want to do what you want to do, and if that is the author's right. But should, you know, longtime readers just not have any, not so much say, but just that, is there any expectation of quote-unquote ownership of the characters because they have a long-term investment having read them over many years? So I guess, what was your sense if you had seen this essay?
Well, I assume either they got their money's worth already from having read the book, or if they didn't, then they wouldn't want another one anyway. So I get loads of people telling me what they want me to write next, all the time. And it's an effort to be polite.
Was it just a question of telling versus hoping, or telling versus asking? Why is there the need to tell, I suppose?
I don't know.
Okay, well, on that note, thank you very much, Larry, for talking with me.
Okay. That'll do it?
Slowly.